Hi everyone. Welcome to another episode of the AICPA Personal Financial Planning Podcast. I'm Andrea Miller, and here we are in our third year of delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment, client service, and practice management topics. Be sure to visit us at AICPA.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Andrea. I'm Steve Siegel, and I'm here to talk about changing domicile in today's environment. What are we focusing on as we think about people wanting to change their domicile? Why might that occur? We can certainly focus on lifestyle, moving perhaps from a colder to a warmer climate or some place that maybe is more suitable to lifestyle. It may be retirement. Maybe certain areas of the country are more conducive to how a person sees their retirement time being most enjoyably spent. Maybe it's family location. Maybe one generation of people live in one area, another group of folks in the family have moved elsewhere, and so there's a desire to be closer to children, possibly to grandchildren. Then there's income tax savings. And as we see around the country, certain states have very high rates of income tax. Other states have low or no income tax, low rates or no income tax at all. And as the tax burden at the federal government is threatened to become higher, and some states' tax burdens are also threatened to become higher, people are looking at that saying, I can save a lot of money by living somewhere else. So a major influence in domicile change. And also other taxes like estate tax, inheritance tax. These are prevalent and an issue in some cases, in some states and not in other states. So you might see a state like Oregon or Massachusetts with a $1 million death tax exemption, Illinois with $4 million, New York with $5.8 million. These numbers, of course, can change. Other states can adopt taxes. But we look at some of the states that have no tax. States like Nevada and Florida and South Dakota with no income tax and no death tax. And so people look at those states and say, maybe I should move on and change my location so that I can take advantage of some important tax savings. Other people are concerned about asset protection. A lot of states have enacted what are called domestic asset protection statutes, where you can create a trust in a state and your creditors will not be able to reach the assets that are there in that trust, assuming you wait a statutory period of time if someone is going to be chasing after you. So there are a lot of reasons to move around the country. So how do we do that? How do we advise the client to make that happen? What are we able to suggest? The first thing we have to recognize is that a person has one domicile. That domicile is considered your fixed, your permanent home. You can have multiple residences. You can have homes all over the place in different states. But the law focuses on your having one domicile. And the law also takes the position that one domicile doesn't end until the other is conclusively established. So you can't sort of have a foot in two places. That's a mistake, because then each place might want to say you're located there. So you really need to make a clean break, and that's very important. How do we establish domicile? If you look at the case law and the litigation in a number of states, that you'll always find that domicile is considered an intent-based test. However, established by objective evidence. So just saying I want to live in state X or state Y, and I have the intent to be there, and I've kind of tossed my hat in that ring, you may have kept your other hats in the different ring. So objective evidence is the important issue. What is the course of conduct that you've followed? If you want to change your domicile, it is clear in every state that's trying to hold on to you that the burden of proof is on the taxpayer, on the person wishing to change domicile. You have to show you've acquired a residence in a new locality, do you even have a chance of persuading the state that you've left? So your actions are much more important than your declarations. Frankly, states are reluctant to let go. Things states like California, New York, New Jersey, North Carolina have a reputation, Massachusetts, others, of being very reluctant to let go. They're kind of like pit bulls. They got a hole in your ankle. They don't want to let go. So what about the courts? Can we look to the courts to have a rational determination? And unfortunately, the answer is no. The courts do not award full faith and credit. If one state says you're domiciled here, they don't automatically say, well, that state has spoken, therefore other states can't make a claim. There are a number of well-known cases where the courts have said that the U.S. Constitution, this is the U.S. Supreme Court speaking, the U.S. Constitution does not prohibit two or more states from each concluding that an individual is a domiciliary for state tax purposes. There was a case involving the Howard Hughes estate where Nevada and Texas fought over his domicile. There was a famous case called the Dorrance case. Mr. Dorrance was the heir to the Campbell Soup fortune. That case was fought between New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Each state determined that Mr. Dorrance was a resident of that state and collected the state's inheritance tax. When the family went to the U.S. Supreme Court to have them sort that out, the Supreme Court said, we're not going to bother to hear that case. So you can't assume that you're going to get a judicial resolution of what you want to be focusing on. So how do we look at objective facts? What are the objective facts that we need to establish, the objective evidence that we need to establish to prove we have moved from one domicile to another? And it's really a two-step process. You have to first sever your ties with your current state, and the second step is establish new ties with your intended state. If you remember the old song from the late 50s or 60s by Neil Sedaka, breaking up is hard to do. This is not an easy course to make this work. So what are the things the cases and the law indicates makes sense if we want to sever ties? Sell and transfer your residential property. Don't continue your employment. If you own a business in the state you're leaving, transfer it to your family members or sell it. It's not just a matter of time spent. Certainly people often tell me, well, if I spend 183 days outside of this state, I'm no longer domiciled there. Not necessarily. Time is not the only factor. It is an important factor, but it's not the only factor that states look to. So don't assume that just days away are enough. It's a step, but it's not the only step. And notice that any part of the day is considered a full day. If you are there for a moment, if you engage in any transaction in a state, that state says, you're here for that day. You could pass through, charge something on your credit card, charge something on your car's Easy Pass. You're in the state that day. So what are some of the things we tell clients to do to sever ties? Change your mailing address. Find doctors in the new state. Withdraw from your house of worship in the old state. Find one in the new state. Remove yourself from the voter list. If you have subscriptions to theaters and other events, remove them, give them up, either donate them or cancel your subscriptions. It's very important to keep a log of your activities. There are now apps that allow that to be done. One is called Moneo, another is called TaxBird, another is called TaxDay. You can put those on your phone and the GPS will be able to tell where you've been. And that sometimes is more reliable as evidence than you just handing over a calendar where you have check marks on the days you were in or out. Your auditor may not believe that. If you're going to be in a state, the one you're trying to leave, don't use your credit cards there. Don't use your cell phone there. Don't use your Easy Pass there. Use only cash for transactions. That way, if you have to say your dates are close, you've not created evidence that you've been in the state on that particular day. A lot of auditors look at holidays. Do you spend the holidays in the state you're trying to leave or the state you've moved to? Have your family visit you in the new state. Don't come back. That suggests you haven't severed enough ties. A very important item is what the law calls near and dear items. These are your personal possessions. Where are they? Do you have family heirlooms, artwork, photo albums, your sports equipment, your golf clubs, your tennis racket, the things that you use on some whatever regular basis, the books in your library? Where are they? Are they in the new state, or are they left behind in the old state? Very important, and you may all laugh at this, but very important is the issue of pets. There was a case in New York where a hedge fund operator moved to Texas, and he was going to save $400,000 in income tax because he moved to Texas. And the dispositive decision of the judge that made the judge agree that he had moved to Texas was that he moved his dog to Texas. He wanted to be close to Fido, and Fido was with him in Texas, and that got the judge to say, I agree with your move to Texas. So those are the things to sever. Get everything out of state one, move into state two. Change the address on everything you have. Now, to establish yourself in the new state, what should you do there? Well, reverse the moves from your old state. If you get a driver's license in the new state, give up your license in the old state. Turn in your license plates to the old state. Get the registered car in the new state. If you're going to make charitable or political contributions, do so in the new state. Register to vote in the new state and make sure you vote in every election, even for the dog catcher. Make sure you are showing your interest in your new location. Make sure you set up bank accounts in the new state. Doesn't mean you have to close bank accounts in national banks, but establish bank accounts locally, somewhere where you can actually physically walk into a bank and make a deposit or withdrawal, etc. Join a house of worship in your new state. Get a safe deposit box in your new state and put your valuables there. Set up a credit card in a local store and use it, not just your Visa or MasterCard, but set up a local store's card. That's further evidence of your intent to be local. Find doctors in the new state. Find veterinarians for your dog in the new state. Get a library card locally. Subscribe to the local newspaper. Take a look at your state law. Are there rules about homestead exemptions? States like Florida and California have special rules. Make sure you sign up. If you're entitled to some kind of property tax relief, if you're a senior, you might be entitled to special relief. Sign the forms for that. We even see people recommending that you change your burial plot. Lots of times families like to be buried in the same location, so moving back where you came from once you've died, that may not be a fatal flaw in your planning. But if you are willing and able, getting a burial plot in the new location makes sense. One of the things I recommend to clients is, in your new state, get a hunting license, get a fishing license, get a firearm license if that's available. Even if you don't care about hunting or fishing, get the license. What does it cost? $20 a year? It shows your desire to be in the local area. Make sure when you file your Form 1040, you file it where the new state says to file. Not every 1040, as you know, goes to the same IRS service center. So instead, if you've moved from the Northeast to the Southeast, file where Southeast folks file, not where Northeast folks file. Make sure if you have children that are school age, you enroll them in the new local schools. Do not leave them behind. That is clearly a suggestion that you really haven't changed your domicile. Your kids are still in State A, you're in State B. You really haven't severed the State A ties. What about your estate planning documents? You might have wills and trusts that made sense in State A. Get new ones in State B, even if you don't change anything in your dispositive situation. Your will or trust will state, I, Mary Smith, a resident of the state of fill-in-the-blank, hereby declare. Well, now you've made another declaration of where you want to be. One of the big mistakes people make is claiming to move on January 1st. And they say, well, I was a resident of the old state until December 31st, and on January 1, I became a resident of the new state. I'll file my final state income tax return in the old state, and now I'm in the new state for the whole year. That doesn't work typically. Auditors look at that and they say, show me the receipt from United Van Lines or whoever you use to move that you actually hired the moving van and moved you on January 1st. That doesn't happen very often. It's possible, I suppose, but it happens rarely. So you typically move during the year. So you'll wind up better filing a part-year resident return and a part-year non-resident return in the final year of that you're in the process of moving from state A to state B. Another test that you see brought up by the courts, and again, this sounds silly, but it's not meant to be and isn't, they call it the teddy bear test. Where is the teddy bear sleeping? You have a family. Maybe you have young children. Where are their toys? Where are their precious stuffed animals that they can't fall asleep without hugging? That is where you are. That's your domicile. So if you can show that there is a room full of unicorns where you claim to be now and an empty room where you left but you're in the process of removing yourself, well, that's a better argument than if the room full of unicorns is in the old state. Again, sounds silly, but the courts look for these things when there are close calls to be addressed. So what happens? The states conduct audits. They don't want to lose you. So what do they do? But there are five factors that are essential in an audit, five factors you need to address. The first one is home. Is your home, do you still have an abode in your former state, meaning a place to live, even if it's an apartment or a condo that wasn't the 5,000 square foot home that you left behind? Do you still have a place to live? That suggests you really haven't left. The second factor is, are you part of an active business in your former state, either as an owner or as an employee? That may not help you if you are an owner or an employee in the state you've left behind. Have you really left? The third factor is the time spent. How much time did you spend in your former state? How much did you spend elsewhere? My view is always that if you spend less than half time in your former state, you might not have to spend all the other days in your new state. You may take a vacation. You may visit people elsewhere. You aren't forced to say, I spent 100 days in state A and 265 days in state B. The 265 days, as long as they're out of A, that can work. The fourth item, as I mentioned before, near and dear items. Those crucial personal items, your pets, your personal things, that's really important. Now, I know some people have two sets of golf clubs and two tennis rackets and things like that, but there are certain things that are not possible to divide. And so those are the ones make sure you take with you. Fido, for example. And number five, the fifth audit issue, is family connections. Many people decide, well, I'm going to see if I like this new state. So one spouse becomes a resident of state A, and the other spouse remains a resident of state B. That doesn't help you. You need both spouses, assuming you're not in the process of divorce or not married in the first place, but a married couple, both should become residents and domiciled in the new state. And if you don't do that, how often do you go visit? Is it weekly, monthly, for 4 months? Do you spend the winter in one area and the summer somewhere else? All of that suggests you might not have really left. Once you get past all of that, what else do some states do? Some states take the position that you are a statutory resident. And if that's the case, they'll admit that you're not domiciled there, but you have an abode there and you spend more than 183 days there. So if they lose on the fact that you're domiciled, they may argue you're a statutory resident. So then they will tax you in the state where they claim you're a statutory resident. You'll pay tax there. You'll get a credit in your domicile state if you've established a different one, but you're going to end up paying the highest of the two taxes. So spending more than half your time having an abode in the state you've left, you may be able to convince them that you've changed your domicile, they'll still hit you with income tax on the statutory resident situation. The current issue that we are all addressing with people now, and we don't know how all this is going to work out, is the result of the pandemic. We have remote workers all over the country, and some of those remote workers cross state lines. Think of a person who is normally working in New York City. They live in New Jersey. They live in Connecticut. Their office has not been available to them since maybe the first week of March. Even if they wanted to go and work there, they can't. The building is closed. The office is locked. No one can enter. New York, New Jersey, a number of states have what they call the convenience of employer rule. What they're saying is if your employer is located here, even if you live in a different state, we don't deny that, the fact that you work here, we tax you. Now what people are going to say is, well, yes, that's when I'm able to work there. But there's no my employer, there's no convenience when the building is locked up and I'm told to stay home until sometime next year. So now what happens? You're working in the state where you live. That state might say, well, now we should collect the taxes from you because your tax that you might have paid to New York, for example, we in New Jersey, we in Connecticut have to give you a credit for that. We don't get any money because New York's taxes is higher than our tax. So now what those states might say, and this could happen anywhere in the country where there's this disparity of where people live, what we might find is people's states saying, well, we're going to tax you because you were here. You go fight with that state that claims the convenience of employer rule. So we're going to see what's happening here. New York and California have announced, and I hope they walk this back, that if health care workers came to voluntarily come to their state to help during the March, April, May terrible months, the early months of the pandemic, you worked there, you got paid, New York, California are going to tax you. So you generously showed up from the middle of the country somewhere, and now they're going to try to tax you. So these are all issues that we have to be aware of. What do we say to clients that want to do this? Go over one of the lists I've mentioned. Go over the factors I've described. Everything I've mentioned is worth looking at, worth doing, and is important to take into account. I've seen state legislatures and governors in their speeches say, no one leaves our state for taxes. That is so not true. If you live in a high tax state, people leave for taxes. The famous case that we all talk about in New Jersey as a gentleman who runs a hedge fund called Appaloosa Management, his name is David Tepper. Mr. Tepper apparently had an income, and I can't verify this, but by reports, of something like $500 million a year, and he paid New Jersey $50 million in annual income tax. He decided to move to Florida. Well, New Jersey's treasurer had to reevaluate the budget because that $50 million was walking out. Mr. Tepper, by saving $50 million a year in income tax, bought himself a little trinket called the Carolina Panthers National Football League team. Costs more than $50 million, but it's a nice saving toward that goal. So people do move for taxes. People do move for all the reasons I mentioned. If you have clients that are focused on moving, focused on changing their location, do the things I'm suggesting. Don't do it halfway. You're going to be sorry if that's the case. Your aggressive states will not let you get out that easily. They will fight. And they fight very aggressively. The California Franchise Tax Board, the New York Tax Department, and other states are beyond aggressive in trying to find ways to keep you viewed as domiciled in their states. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Steve Siegel, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website to find the Advisor's Guide to Financial and Estate Planning. Stay tuned for Andrea Miller, who will tell you how to find this valuable resource. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy, and enjoy the rest of your day.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Our hope is that you found a valuable takeaway that helps you help your clients. Check out the show notes to find resources related to this episode. We are living through unprecedented times, and we want to know what you need most to support your clients and your business. feel free to send an email to financialplanning@aicpa.org with topic ideas. The AICPA PFP section is the home for professional financial planners, designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your practice to the next level. To find more valuable resources, visit us at aicpa.org/PFP. If you'd like to know more about the CPA-exclusive financial planning credential, go to aicpa.org/PFS. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.